I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 144 of Digital Divination. We are only six from 150.
And only 56 away from 200.
Oh, we can start counting
and
like
only
that.
96 away from 250.
Okay.
And those are, and those are the, all the numbers that there are.
That's it. No more numbers. I remember when we were like at 50 and I started like looking for 100 or something, and Ron was like, are you going to count this down every single time? So I kind of wait till we get a little closer.
Hey, speaking of numbers, do y'all want me to tell you what my weird latest obsession is right now?
Yes.
I okay. have been focused. I've been like weirdly spending a lot of time and I've been doing this on Joe Piscini's Twitch stream with him. Go to twitch.tv/JoeAdultman. We've been doing what's called Sudokuvania. It is a Metroidvania Sudoku, right?
What?
So it's so wild. It's this gigantic Sudoku grid. Okay, well, let's explain something to all who don't know what's been going on in the realm of modern Sudoku. Online, because you can only do this online. You can't do this in like a pen and paper. It's called Fog of War Sudoku, which part of the grid is blank, like grayed out, I should say. And then when you put numbers in, more of the grid shows up and appears, and there's maybe more clues in there to continue on your journey, right? It's fascinating as heck, but this is a giant grid that's just filled with this fog, and then you do a bit of it, and it introduces new rules, and like, hey, now you know what this symbol means in the grid. And so you go, and then every area has a boss fight in it, and that boss is a whole other Sudoku puzzle that you click through and go, and they're super hard. And so you do that, and it says, okay, you finish this whole other boss grid. Now put the number 3 where that boss monster face was, emoji was, right? I'm like, okay, that's one number. You like spend an hour and a half just to get one number in here.
One number in place.
And there's like secrets and hidden parts of the grid that you don't know about that sort of pop up, and side quests and collectibles. It's an amazing piece of work.
Sudoku Adventure.
It's a whole Sudoku adventure, exactly.
Wow.
And we have not finished it yet. I feel like I spent at least 10 to 12 hours on this thing so far.
Wow.
And we're not done, and I'm just, I can't wait to go back and do some more of it.
Okay, so we're going to do an extra short episode, so Jason, get back.
I don't think I'm going to do it tonight, because it'll be late, and I'm already a little tired from today, but maybe tomorrow night. Keep an eye out on, go subscribe to Joe's Twitch stream.
10 to 12. Do you consider? The answer, I'm pretty sure, is yes. Do you consider yourself, Jason, to be a very, very fast at Sudoku?
No, I don't consider myself to be very fast. I consider myself to be knowledgeable and competent at it, but I don't think I'm fast at it. I have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. When I'm looking at a row or a column, I'm like, what's not here? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, 6. Okay, you know, like I have to kind of. I scan very quickly. Yeah.
Well, speaking of like online games and things like that, recently.
Great segue.
I know, good isn't segue. That pretty good? Yeah, so Polygon had an article about Starfinder Afterlight. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that they're going to have a Kickstarter for next month, so October, and it's set for a 2027 release. So it's kind of far down the road, but since they're doing this, you know, I'm thinking, you know, maybe we have time here to provide input into like the final product. So I want to talk about like, what are 3 things that we would like to see in Starfinder Afterlight when it comes out in 2027?
And it's really nine things if each of us have three.
Yes. So exactly. It's like top nine things. Well, as long as they're all different.
Nine. And nine is a Sudoku number. There's the nine digits and nine rows and nine boxes.
Oh, okay. I don't Sudoku. Yeah. Man, now I got to go look that
up. It's all coming together.
All right. So does that sound good, you guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I'm excited. Did you watch the little mini teaser showing the first two companions video?
Oh, I didn't watch the video. No, I just read the article.
It's like 25 seconds long, and it's just the two new, definitely introducing two of the companions that you can do.
Right. And more than that, kind of the overall threat that you'll be addressing in very vague terms.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now I got to go
check it out.
All right. So
stop this video now. Stop this recording now. But if you're listening, also stop and watch that 25-second video.
Whoa! No! Wait! Don't we have to get to a certain viewer length for it to count as a watch? Wait at least that long.
Just pause this and then come back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how YouTube works. So if that's good enough or not.
I don't know either. Oh well. So Jason,
mute this and leave it playing. And watch that other 25-second video, and then come back, and then rewind 25 seconds here, and then listen to us. Yeah, that'll do it.
Okay, you're not telling me to do that. You're telling
the audience. No. Okay. You go watch it after we're recording.
I keep thinking, am I supposed to pause?
How would John rewind us?
Yeah, he's some kind of witch warper.
So, yes. So, Jason, since you obviously have watched the videos, and so you're even more knowledgeable about it, do you want to get started?
Fair. Sure, why not? I'll do my three, or are we doing one at a time?
Everybody do their three. It's a little bit easier.
Okay, great.
All three. John needs to put you on pause while he goes and watches the video.
Don't mind 25 me. Seconds. Don't
okay.
worry about
okay.
it. So I went and also looked at their Epic Teller's website and stuff for what's going on there. And I was very and reading the Polygon, I was very excited to see and hear in this video that Fred Tatasciore of Star Trek Lower Decks and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and 100 other video games, very talented, very prolific voice actor, is one of the voices. He's the voice of the Vesk. So I'm very excited about that. And I would love to see even more kind of names, right? If they end up getting some cool names in there, that's just going to make it even more exciting to play. Voice actors from other sorts of, I don't know if we're going to get who does Nathan Drake? I can't remember now. I don't know if we're going to get that one of those big names, or even like a Matt Mercer kind of he's in everything. But hey, fingers crossed, we get maybe another actor from Lower Decks or something, or someone from the Futurama voice cast. That would be great. So I'm looking forward to the voice talent. It's going to be cool. And the other thing I did note see in this sort of companion, they sort of vaguely hinted at more companions, and not saying who they were or anything, and how they're talking a lot about it being how Larian is a big inspiration for them and Baldur's Gate 3 is a big inspiration for them. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing some romance options. I don't do that much in video games, and it's always a little cringe when that happens, but I want to see what they're going to do with that, seeing what they've got so far. I'm really curious.
So between the companions, romance. right? So
no, the player as okay. romancing one of the companions. I mean, if they want to do romance between the companions, that'll be fun too. But if you like, neat, do romance quests to that.
And got it. Yeah.
It's always like something you have to do. Like you do them a favor, do a little side adventure for them. And I would love to see what those are, and then they're like, hey, yes. Okay. Well now let's smooch. And then you smooch them and then it's all good. they give you some extra benefit. It doesn't even need to have like a mechanical benefit in the game. I would just be, it's always fun to do a little story smooching.
Yeah.
Although I will say some games will take not a mechanical benefit, but some sort of narrative one. Like if you've developed a relationship with somebody, if later on somebody gets kidnapped, it's the one you are close to. Kind of, hits a little home.
I mean, it was all sort of like developing all these relationships with everyone made it possible for the Mass Effect 3, no, the Mass Effect 2 ending, right? Mm-hmm. To go through and not, and if you built up all these great relationships with all the crew and whatnot. Like, no one dies. But you know, because you're all working like a team. Otherwise, you know, or something that does happen that's like, oh yeah, they pick the one that you're the most interested in, and that bad thing happens to them. That would have a lot of good story weight. And third, customizability of like the main character, the character you're playing. You know, they talked about they mentioned ancestries. There'll be X number of ancestries. I can't remember which. And classes from Starfinder second edition. And I hope they do one of the weirder, at least one weird ancestry, like the Brathu or even Astrozone or something like that. Like that would be cool. I mean, you know, with just that's Starfinder. We have the weird ancestry. So let's show them off. Let's have them.
Yeah, they mentioned the two, the Yosoki and the Vesk, right? Those are the two they introduced in the video.
Right. And yeah, I assume those will be playable ancestries, right, as the player character, yeah, as well.
But I think they mentioned that there's going to be six classes and seven ancestries, or maybe as many as 10 ancestries if the Kickstarter does very well. Right, so there'll be a lot of options.
Let's keep an eye on that Kickstarter. And if there's a stretch goal on there to put in Brathu as a playable ancestry, then we got to pump up those numbers.
Yeah.
I'll jump in because your number three moves right into my number one. I want to see this have a lot of replayability, and that comes in kind of two axes. Mm-hmm. I want to have a lot of different character options, six classes and up to 10 ancestries, mix and match them a lot of ways. I do find in these games, I have a tendency to not use the class that one of the companions I have is. Like if I have this Tycho, the Yosoki operative, I'm not likely to play an operative. And if I know that Cole, the Vesk soldier, is somebody I like palling around with, I won't be a soldier. I'll be one of the other four classes instead, or, you know, the other five to eight ancestries, just because I want to mix it up. But I hope there's a lot of replayability, both in types of characters that you play and in the story itself, like that your choices really matter. Mm-hmm. And if you go through, like I was really excited to see the comparison to Baldur's Gate 3 here, because I've played a lot of Baldur's Gate 3. It's really the only game I've gotten into in the past decade, and I've gotten into it a lot. And I've replayed it like several times, partly because there's some sort of glitch in my copy. And so I'll get to like level 6 or 7 or so and then have to restart it. And I've learned to actually embrace that, because now there's a lot of like, oh, now I get to try this other combo because I wanted to restart it anyway. Now I have to. So my number one, I want there to be lots of replayability. Number two, speaking of levels, they mentioned that this is going to be level 1 to level 7 or 8. I like that. But I hope that it gives a real kind of zero to hero feel. I like games where, when it comes out, you can be, you know, hardly expected to fight your way out of a paper bag, right? And that's kind of the way you learn the game. But by the end, you're fighting paper bag golems. I don't know. It's my metaphor is my metaphor is falling apart. But you fight a lot of things that are a lot tougher. That was just inconceivable when you were at a lower level. You're like, oh well, now I am capable. I feel like I've become a real hero. And I think levels 1 to 7 or 8 are really going to give that in Starfinder, but I hope they lean into that. My number three is that I saw that this is going to be about the planet Eox is going to be a big role here, and I really hope that we learn a lot about it. I think that I'd like to learn more about Eox's history and the things going on there now, and I feel like this game is a real opportunity to really reward people who dig into the lore of that planet.
And if they're doing Eox and then they get Zoe and they need a voice actor for Zoe, you know, that's going to be a real juicy part for whoever gets that.
Like, isn't Zoe's an Eoxian, but does Zoe live on Eox?
He was one game show there, right? Like,
oh, well, I guess so. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't necessarily live there, but I don't know if Zoe Media is on Eox or not. But
I
like,
think he has his own, you know, station.
Starship. Yeah, he's got his own sort of like pleasure barge kind of starship that he goes
place
around.
To do it,
He does. He's around. He's around.
Yeah.
He gets around.
Well, so my first one actually ties in really well with Ron's. You know, he talked about Eox. Because this game is designed both for existing players to kind of see a video game of the tabletop RPG and new players to introduce them to Starfinder, I hope they have a lot of lore that's covered in here, you know, stuff that will help a new player who wants to get into the game as a tabletop game. They won't feel as intimidated because they don't know about all the planets or all the different ancestries or all the different organizations or all the major plot lines for, you know, who were the Vesk's at war with now and things like that. And that's something that's kind of fun that you can introduce via quests, you know, all kinds of different storylines that are actually taking place in the game. And they did mention that as new books and supplements come out for the tabletop game, that's going to be downloadable content for the video game. So that's kind of neat that you'll be able to learn it that way as well. So that's kind of my first one.
Let me respond to that real quick. Baldur's Gate 3 does this really effectively with books, I found. Like, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books, and each one will only give you, like, a couple pages of lore. But if you really want to find the lore, and you, like, come into, like, a library, and you can click, and you're like, oh, there's books to take off the shelf. Oh, I'm going to learn a lot. Or you can be like, you know, no, you know what? I know all about the stuff that this... the god that this library is devoted to, so I'm just going to move on, right? So the lore becomes really opt-in Baldur's Gate 3 in a way that I think lets you set how much lore you want to take in from the game. So that could be a good lesson for them to take from Baldur's Gate 3, I think.
Just put it on an InfoSphere link. You get there, you know, as soon as you get to a new place, you can download the info, get to the InfoSphere, connect into it, and right. Be like, what's all the lore here? And be like, lore, social media feed.
Yeah, new thing popping up on your data pad, right? Yeah. You're like, ooh.
Oh, I've subscribed to Potrefax. Yes. Yeah.
So my number two thing has to do with Starship Combat. So in Starfinder Second Edition, we don't really have tactical Starship Combat. We kind of have, we don't really have narrative combat. It's kind of like cinematic Starship Combat, which I think you could illustrate really well in this game, like kind of cinematic. But I also think that you could have different types of combat that players could opt into. So if you just wanted, oh, you know, I just want to have the cinematic level, or if I want to be very tactical, you know, maybe you have a mission where you're controlling a fighter and having to do movement in a chase, or if you want to do it with, you know, a bridge crew, so you have a whole bridge team that's doing that, or if you just want to have it very high level cinematic, you could actually offer all of those in a video game at different levels, and you could actually see what people like to do the most, and maybe then take that information and use that to inform what type of combat you want to do with a tabletop game, or vice versa. You know, so it could be an information gathering tool as well, is something kind of fun. So that's kind of my second one. And my third one is I'm actually going to throw a curveball in here. So I used to play Neverwinter Nights, which is basically built on the 3.5 engine. One of the things I really liked about Neverwinter Nights is that you could, as players, you could mod the game, build your own virtual worlds, have different spells and do, you know, like for I hosted a virtual world for a bunch of years. We had thousands of players on it, and we went from levels 1 to 40. And so we scaled up lots of different things. And so when you talk about zero to hero, it's like you would have stuff. It became where the goal ended up being, can I build a character at 40th level that could take on all content like solo? That became, you know, what is, you know, and so lots of power. Like, you could build, okay, if we want to build 2-person teams for this area and so on and so forth. And eventually you end up, like, for different areas you wanted to tackle, you'd build a specific character just to tackle, to farm those areas for whatever things you wanted to get. Along the same lines, though, somebody had programmed a kind of like a sandbox where you could automatically be leveled up to level 40 in this case. So whatever the highest level in Starfinder Afterlight would be. And then you could test how different builds worked. You could pull in different creatures and say, okay, if I build this creature with these abilities, these feats, my character, how does it fare against this creature or this creature and this creature? So now I'm not saying that the programmers who are putting it together should put all that in, but if you enable them to mod it like we used to do be able to do with Unreal Engine based games and things like that. I think that would be a lot of fun and really extend kind of the push the boundaries of the game. And then a lot of times those are things that then the developers say, hey, this is really cool. Maybe we'll put some of those in our core game as well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Modding tools would be amazing. I mean, I can't imagine people would be, you know, working on that kind of stuff for years afterwards, right. Give the game a real long life. And who knows what they'll do with, like, if they'll do any DLC that's like, right. Okay, now let's do the DLC that goes from level 9 to 12 or something like that. And here's right. some quests that go with it. And we actually code in all of the actions and feats and spells that would be in those levels, but wouldn't be in the base game because you don't need them. As basically, you don't need to have an eighth rank spell.
Right, and right. If you're only going to the 8th level.
And you're not going to fight anyone who's casting it either, because that would wipe your party.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of that, now that I think about it, might be a little bit easier than you'd think, because, oh, we don't have 8th rank spells yet. You don't need to come up with an entire suite of 8th rank spells, when in fact, cantrips will scale up automatically. A lot of your lower rank spells will scale up automatically. So a lot of the, gosh, what do we offer for 6th, 7th, 8th, you know, 9th rank, it's kind of already been done in a way that's pretty... that's the system itself backs into a lot of options you have it to be even more powerful with the stuff you've got.
Well, the system actually has spells up to 10th level. I mean, there are 10th level spells for Starfinder. They're not many. I mean, you know, they don't have a lot. Well,
it comes to a point because of what Ron was saying, because all the lower stuff can scale up as well.
Right.
I mean, it's just a matter of, like, you know, obviously all the stuff they can throw in there would be stuff that probably already exists in the core book, or something that comes out later. Right. If there's another book, whatever, you know, when other core books come out or whatever they are, code them in. I mean, once you get the base kind of like system down, I feel like, you know, the math in there, I think all that, you know, what you need to program is extra just sort of iterations on that, but also all the graphics and all the sort of animations.
Right.
That
happen. That's true.
That's always the tricky part of why you can't just have everything all the time. You've got to, someone's got to make that stuff in the game itself, not just necessarily, you know, pour it in. You know, Archives of Nethys is not exactly
absolutely true.
But you know, and considering how, you know, we'll see how the Kickstarter does, you know, and where those stretch goals are going to land. Even if that doesn't encompass that, you know, putting out DLCs. I mean, Alcat did a bunch of DLCs for Wrath of the Righteous and Kingmaker and stuff, and you know. It sells, right? That stuff sells because people want to play these games, and they end up playing them for a long time. Like you said, they get that in there and do the play them over again, replay them, try different builds and stuff.
You know,
so adding modern tools to that would be just exponentially.
So one of the things they mentioned is that Alcat wasn't making this because they're busy with both a Warhammer and Expanse video game, which. I didn't know they were working on an Expanse game. I'm really excited. I remember now seeing the plugs for that. But this, the studio doing this, Epicenter or something?
Epic Tellers Entertainment.
They mentioned they have a relatively small team, and that's, I guess that's my only real concern with that, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, that's why it's going to take until 26. I wonder if we're going to have a 2026 like alpha, like Baldur's Gate 3 did.
Maybe
we can get a little taste of it a little early. That would be great. You know, video games kind of do early access all the time now for like a good year, sometimes longer. I mean, we're talking about like literally like this month, Hades 2 comes out of early access. You know, that's been in. Around, I bought that game when it was, you know, when it first, that was like last year sometime. So, you know, that could be something that they do and then fully release in 2027, or not, just they might want to just keep a lid on it until it's fully, fully cooked. And that's also great.
But they'll probably still have alpha testers. I mean, I've been alpha testers for a bunch of,
games. In their company, you know, they'll have a testing team, they'll have a QA team, or they'll hire out a company that does QA if their company isn't big enough. But I'm just talking about a lot of,
like open
video games into early access you could buy it. You buy it now, and they kind of companies will use that money from that to kind of fuel the continuation of the development of the game.
Yeah,
but we'll see how the Kickstarter does and all that. I mean, their Epic Tellers seems like a pretty new. They said they were founded in 2023, so they're very, very new. And if this is, you know, again, if the Kickstarter gets huge, they might find a way to getting a slightly larger team and just to handle all of that. And who knows, fingers crossed that maybe they can even sort of also pivot to doing a Pathfinder game of the same type.
Right.
There's a Pathfinder game coming out soon too. What's that?
Are you referring to the Abomination Vaults game?
Yeah, I guess so.
Gallaspire survival
game? No, the Abomination Vaults something else. Action game.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a Diablo, but in Abomination Vaults.
Right. Okay.
Oh. But I like this one a little bit better because it actually uses the full rule set. And
well, sure. I think it's all great. We should have video game, Pathfinder, and Starfinder video games that encompass every genre possible.
Yes. Every year. Have every genre possible.
Not every year, every genre possible, but let's spread them out so I can have a chance to play them. Give me a Metroidvania, Starfinder, Metroidvania.
Well, it's interesting.
Sudoku in. You want Sudoku in your Starfinder game?
Yes. Sure. Why not?
All right. Okay. Well, that I think that'll be a lot of fun. I think that'll be good. And with the Kickstarter coming out, look for that. And once that we get more information on that, maybe we'll talk about that down the road.
Sure. Yeah. And maybe we'll have something more to say.
All right. Well, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.